Chapter 14.
Oh, no, I moaned, running to the edge of the cistern. No, 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 no! You can't hatch!
But the eggs didn't listen. They just kept going, the precious golden shells shattering before my eyes as little beaks pecked their way free.
How bad is this?
Nick demanded, crouching down on the edge beside me.
Bad, I said. Cockatrice eggs are magical components, like chimera horns or dragon scales. That's what people buy them for. Not for babies.
Nick's face grew grim.
Well, they're not going back in. How much are the chicks worth?
I had no idea. I didn't even know if people wanted magical chicken lizards. But there was no point in crying over broken eggs. Cockatrice chicks were what we had, so cockatrice chicks were what we'd sell. But when I opened my mouth to ask Sybil for a price check, a ragged voice spoke up behind us.
I'll buy them.
Nick and I turned in unison to see Kaufman rolling himself over.
I'll buy them.
He wheezed again.
I'll buy them all right now. Just name your...
He cut off with a hacking cough, spitting one of his formerly perfect teeth out into the concrete with a wince.
Name your price,
he finished feebly.
Since when do you say name your price?
Nick asked suspiciously.
Since I'm out of leverage and trying to buy something that's worth more than money,
Kaufman said, his bloody mouth spreading into a wry grin.
But maybe I shouldn't have told you that. You don't even know what you've got.
Of course we do, I said, glaring at him. They're cockatrices.
But do you know why that matters?
Kaufman pressed.
Why they're worth so much.
I glanced at Nick, who shrugged, and Kaufman's grin grew wider.
Cockatrices are amazing animals. They're almost human-level intelligent, but even more vicious. And they have memories like steel traps. They're trainable, magical, and most important of all, baitable. Once you get one into a frenzy, it's capable of amazing feats of strength before it goes down. But due to their incredibly stupid breeding habits, they're highly endangered.
He nodded down at the glowing pit.
Those eggs probably just doubled the world's cockatrice population. Do you know what that means?
They're rare, Nick answered, and rare is expensive.
This goes beyond expensive,
Kaufman promised, his voice taking on that salesman pitch he'd used on me back at my apartment.
You can't buy them for love or money, because there simply are none to buy. Even with his wealth and connections, my employer has only been able to secure 2 in the past year. 2! But that's about to change.
He pushed himself up so that he was sitting against the ladder, looking us in the eye.
I'm willing to buy every one of them off you. Right now.
His eyes flicked to me.
I know you need money tonight. If you take my offer, I'll wire it straight to your account. No questions asked. No strings attached.
My mouth went dry. That was a very good deal. Too good. Hold up, I said, putting a hand on Nick's arm before he could accept. Why are you doing this?
Because you've got what I want,
Kaufman said, glancing down at the ropes Nick had tied around him so tightly his hands were starting to turn purple.
And I'm not exactly in a position to bargain.
I get that part, I said, frustrated. But why do you want them? You don't seem like an environmentalist buying them to save the species. What are you going to do with 100 cockatrices? Kaufman looked at me like I was a silly, naive little girl.
Fight them, of course,
I didn't need the icy wind that rose back up around me then to feel the chill in my gut.
Fight them? I repeated. You mean like dog fighting?
They're so much better than dogs,
Kaufman said eagerly.
They're smarter, and they're armored. Once they go through their first molt, their feathers are like iron. They're highly social, brave, fierce. They love. They remember. They sacrifice. You couldn't ask for a better animal for the arena. The whole world went mad for them last spring when a pair took down a combat robot at an exhibition match in China. Naturally, we tried to get a stable going, but there were no cockatrices to buy. Everyone was trying, but it didn't matter how much money you put on the table. There are simply none to be had.
My scowl deepened. So you hired Dr. Lyle to make them?
We hired Dr. Lyle to create a resource,
Kaufman said smugly, giving me a superior look.
This is about so much more than a handful of cockatrices. This is about creating a monopoly. The whole world wants cockatrices. But other than a few highly protected reserves, there are no cockatrices. It's the perfect storm of insane demand and no supply. Whoever can solve that problem will have the entire industry at their feet. That's power, Miss Yonge. And my employer is far more interested in power than in money.
He turned to Nick.
I'll give you $5 million for the eggs, the ritual site, and the notes.
Nick set his jaw stubbornly. $10 million.
No! I cried at the same time. The grave cold wind was pushing at me now, but I batted it away impatiently. I didn't need supernatural help to know this was wrong. Down below, one of the chicks had made it out of its egg and was hopping around on the net. Like all newly hatched creatures, it was slimy and alien-looking. It wasn't cute at all with its sharp, pointy beak and a lizard's tail, but its golden-rimmed eyes were clear when they met mine, gleaming with innocent curiosity as it started hopping toward me.
No, I said again, looking at Nick. We can't sell these animals to him.
Of course you can,
Kaufman said.
No, we can't, I snapped, putting my hand down for the little chick, which turned out to be not so little after all. It had looked small down in the pit, but when it hopped up to me, the creature that landed my arms was the size of a large cat. A cat with scaly chicken feet, a beak as sharp as a razor, and pin feathers that pricked like actual pins when it butted its wobbling, oversized head under my hand for a scratch. Now I see why Dr. Lyle ran, I said, turning my glare back on Kaufman. He was trying to save them, wasn't he?
Theodore Lyle was a disgraced professor who developed an expensive obsession with creating alchemical life,
Kaufman said coldly.
He didn't even ask why we wanted the eggs. All he cared about was funding for his experiments. It was only later, when he realized his theories actually worked, that he started asking questions, calling them his babies and other nonsense. I tried to make him see reason, showed him the projected profits and such. But once he realized we were going to be selling the cockatrices to arenas, he would hear none of it. He stole the eggs from the site I'd helped him prepare, and hid them out here with a spell on the door to make sure they wouldn't hatch until he came to get them.
I was happy he had. I understood now what Dr. Lyle had meant when he'd said that without my help he'd have committed great evil. He'd known what kind of man Kaufman was, but he'd still agreed to work for him because he'd needed the funding. He hadn't truly realized what he was attempting, what it meant to create life. By the time he did understand what Kaufman intended to do with his work, it was too late. The eggs were already made. All he could do was run away and try to protect the creatures he'd created from the man he'd so foolishly sold them to. But then he died. He died alone, with no one even knowing where his babies were. No wonder he'd been desperate enough to accept the dubious help of a pair of money-hungry cleaners. But at least I understood now why he'd been so adamant about not selling to Kaufman. This wasn't like selling unfertilized eggs to mages. It wasn't even like selling normal animals to be pets, or even to the slaughterhouse. At least there, death was quick. If we gave the chicks to Kaufman, we'd be condemning them to slavery in an arena. It wasn't a question of if they would suffer. Their suffering was the point. It was the entertainment. They would be playthings. Toys for cruel masters who put their backs against the wall for sport. And while there was a world of difference between our situations, I had some mighty strong opinions about that. We're not selling them to you.
Don't be stupid, Kaufman said. Of course you are. I'm your only buyer.
We can get another, I said.
No, you can't.
He leaned forward.
I don't think you appreciate just how rare these animals are. They're so endangered, and so magical, that they've been given special protection under the Peacemaker's Edict. If you try to sell one out in the open, you'll bring the wrath of the Dragon of Detroit and all his allies down on your head. With that kind of heat, legality doesn't matter. No auction house in the world will touch those chicks. My employer is the only one audacious enough to defy the dragons in the name of profit and power. He is your only option, which is why I'm only going to give you 6 million.
8, Nick said.
7,
Kaufman snapped back. No, I yelled, glaring at Nick. We can't do this. Nick's jaw tightened.
They're just animals, he said stubbornly. And $7 million is a lot of money.
I'm not saying it isn't, I replied, putting my back to Kaufman so I wouldn't have to look at his hateful face. You know how bad I need this cash, but this is wrong, Nick.
So's everything else we do, Nick said. You didn't complain when I shot those men, or when we stole a hand from the morgue.
I actually complained a lot about that last one, I reminded him. But this is different. Everyone does bad things. Some of us do a lot of them, but there has to be a line. I held up the baby cockatrice, which was currently chewing a hole through my supposedly indestructible gloves. You heard what he said. These things are near human-level intelligent. They love. They fear. They grieve. I pointed into the glowing pit behind him. There are 100 innocent babies down there. It doesn't matter if they were made by magic or hatched by a toad. They don't deserve to be slaves who suffer for ticket sales. Yeah, 7 million is a lot, but it's nothing compared to what he's asking you to give up in return. What's the point of money if you have to sell your soul to get it?
Spoken like a rich girl,
Nick snarled, staring down at me with a fury I'd never seen from him before. At least, not directed at me.
What do you know about money? You've never been really poor. You're scraping by right now, but you could go back to your dad anytime you want. Just walk right back into that life of private cars and jets. But while 7 million might not be a big deal to you, it could change the world for me. Do you know how hard I've worked? The things I've done to get even a fraction of that? You think I like taking eviction jobs?
I flinched at the reminder, and he bared his teeth.
That's right, he said. You think I didn't see your face every time I raised my hand. You thought I was scum. But someone was going to get paid to evict those poor bastards. Might as well be me. Judge me all you want, but I took that money, and I made my life better.
I'm not judging you, I said. Maybe I did before, but now I know that I was wrong. You're not a bad person, Nick. And that's why we can't do this. Because if you take that money, you will be.
Why do you even care? He roared. I thought you were willing to do anything to get free of your dad. Why did we go through all of this if you're just going to throw in the towel now that we're finally at the end?
Because I was willing to do anything to me, I yelled. I'm the one who's trapped.
But just because I'm willing to gnaw my arm off to get free doesn't mean I'm willing to gnaw off someone else's. If the cost of my freedom is selling babies into slavery, then it's not freedom at all. I'm just trading one prison for another. A worse one. Because I can hate my dad all day long. But I'm not willing to hate myself.
Then don't, he said coldly, jerking his head back toward the glowing net, which was now filled with cheeping, hopping cockatrices.
You can take your 40% and do whatever you want. Start a petting zoo, I don't care. But 60% of that lot is mine, and you can't stop me from selling them to anyone I want.
A lump formed in my throat as he spoke. A sad, hard lump no words seemed to be able to get by.
He's right, you know,
Kaufman said behind me.
You're wasting your breath. Nick's a stone-cold killer who'd sell his mother if the price was right. He keeps saying he's getting out of the business, that he's a cleaner now. But I hired him just a few months ago to break a man's knees. I didn't even have to up my rates.
Nick closed his eyes.
Shut up. But Nick understands the power of money better than anyone,
Kaufman went on.
There's nothing in this world he loves more. Because money is the only thing keeping him alive.
What does he mean by that? I asked. Nick turned away.
Nothing a rich girl would understand.
Of course I can't understand if you won't tell me, I said angrily, smacking my hand against his metal chest. But you keep saying rich girl like it means ignorant. And that's as stupid as it is wrong. It's because I've been rich that I understand what money can't do. I've lived the luxury of never having to worry about food or clothes or if I could pay a bill, and I threw it away, because the price of having all that wealth was giving up something I was worthless without. That doesn't mean I don't like money. I want to be rich just as much as you do. That's why I bust my butt as a cleaner. But I also know that money isn't everything. I know this, because I tried to buy my freedom and integrity and love, and I couldn't. But while you can't buy them, you can absolutely sell them. That's why I'm fighting you so hard on this. You're about to sell something that money can't buy. That's a bad deal, Nick. And I'd be a worthless business partner if I let you take it. By the time I finished, Nick's fists were clenched so tight that his metal hand was creaking. I wasn't sure if that meant I'd gotten through to him or if he was barely holding himself back from punching me. The reality was probably a little of both. But if there was one thing of value I'd learned from my father, it was that once you'd drawn a line in the sand, you could never step back. So I didn't. I stayed stubbornly put, meeting Nick glare for glare until he turned away with a curse.
She's an idiot, Nicola, Kaufman warned. Don't listen to her!
Nick said nothing. He just stood there, steadfastly looking at anything that wasn't Kaufman or me. Since the cockatrice chicks were the only other thing in the room, this meant he ended up watching them as they tussled and nipped and snoozed together in blissful ignorance of what was going on above their hideous little heads.
Kaufman, he said at last, after the silence had stretched on for way too long. Who are you working for?
Kaufman rolled his bloodshot eyes.
He's spending millions of dollars to corner the market on rare animals for the purposes of fighting them in arenas. Who do you think I'm working for?
I had no idea. Nick must have, though, because that tidbit of information seemed to push him over the edge.
No deal, he said.
Really? I said excitedly.
Have you lost your mind?
Kaufman yelled at the same time.
We're talking 7 million! I know exactly how much we're talking about, Nick said, putting his face in his hands. And the answer is no. You can't possibly...
Kaufman cut off with a sputter.
Do you really think you're not for sale? You! I'm always for sale,
Nick snapped back. But not to him.
The way he said that shut Kaufman down cold. It made me cower, too. There was a lifetime of hate buried under those words. But I didn't dare ask him about it. From the look on his face, Nick was going to kill someone in the next 5 minutes. And if I didn't want it to be me, I'd better make myself scarce. I did so by walking to the far edge of the cistern and bringing up my AR to see if there was such a thing as a cockatrice rescue.
You should tell him he made the right choice, Sybil whispered.
I don't think he wants to hear that, I whispered back.
Probably not,
she agreed.
His body temperature and pulse rate are way up. Better let him cool down, figuratively and literally.
I nodded slowly, reading the mission statement of the Cockatrice Council of Canada to see if they were legit.
You know, Sybil said, you don't have to give them to a rescue. Pet store isn't a bad fate, and unlike charities, they pay. Maybe not millions, but anything's better than nothing.
Not in this case, I said, opening a new window to bring up the list of entities protected by the Peacemaker Edict. Sure enough, cockatrices were right at the top, which meant Kaufman had been telling the truth. The bastard. Anyone who'll buy an animal protected by the Edict is either insane or a criminal. Either way, they're going to turn around and resell to the highest bidder. And unless cockatrices become the hot, must-have celebrity pet in the next few hours, that means the arena. There's simply too much money on the table not to go there. The only people we can trust are the ones who already have cockatrices, because they're the ones who've already been offered millions and turned them down. Unfortunately for me, all of those people seemed to live in secret locations. That was understandable when you were protecting animals that were worth gobs of money, but it made them really difficult to contact. That said, there was one group I knew would be interested that would be very easy to call. I actually already had their number stored in my phone, in case of emergencies. I wasn't sure if this counted, but if there was anyone who was interested in enforcing the Peacemaker's Edict, it was his office at the DFZ Dragon Consulate.
Oh, boy,
Sybil said as I selected the number from my contacts list.
Your dad is not going to like this.
Since when has that stopped me? I muttered, holding the phone up to my ear. Hi, I said when the operator picked up. I think I've got something you want. There was no faster way to get a dragon's, or a mortal who worked for a dragon's, attention. The moment the word want left my mouth, I heard her click on a recorder, all but guaranteeing the circus I knew I was about to bring down on our heads. 2 hours later, the cistern was swarming with men and women wearing the serpentine badge of the Peacemaker. We even got a legit dragon to oversee the transfer. To be fair, she was very young. She didn't have a fraction of the predatory menace my father could put out, and she was a member of the Heartstriker clan, which is basically the bottom-shelf generic brand of dragon. But while she wasn't up to my dad's level, her human form was still unspeakably beautiful, and her burning magic was razor-sharp, holding the ever-twisting gnarls in place through sheer brute force so the retrieval team could work. My father had always sneered at the Peacemaker for being weak, but so far, I was beyond impressed with his organization. They'd even persuaded the DFZ to open a special doorway between the gnarls and the Dragon Consulate, which I hadn't known was possible. Clearly, the rumors about the city owing her local dragon big time were no joke. Then again, you didn't get to be the dragon of the most magical city in the world if you weren't something special. Thank you so much for this, I said, bowing low before the Heartstriker dragoness when the portal stabilized and she could finally release her magic. And for coming so quickly.
You have to be quick for these things, the dragoness said distractedly, her electric green eyes locked on the virtual clipboard she'd brought up in her AR. Cockatrice smuggling has been a major problem all year. If we don't move fast, we lose them, and we can't afford any more of that. The species is close enough to extinction as it is, though if it were up to me, I'd let them die.
A species that unwilling to breed deserves to go extinct. But the peacemaker's wife is friends with the spirit of cockatrices. So they go on the list and I do my job. She glanced back at the ritual circle in the cistern, where armored mages were carefully lifting cat-sized cockatrices into padded transport cages. At least they're babies this time. The last one I had to save was the size of a horse. Nearly bit my arm off. She shook her head with a sigh and flipped her floating clipboard around. Sign, she ordered. You put in the call, so that makes you legal guardian. Just sign here to surrender your rights, and we'll be out of your hair. Actually, I said quickly, they're not all mine. I only own 40%. My partner owns the rest. She shrugged. I don't care who signs. I do, I said, meeting the dragon's eyes. Never a smart move, but a vital one if you wanted them to actually listen to what you said. Some dragons would eat you on the spot for such insolence, but most respected mortals who didn't cower. Since she worked for the peacemaker, I was betting this dragoness was one of the latter. Sure enough, after a good 30 seconds of dominant staring contest, she waved me away. Do what you want. I bowed again and scrambled up the manhole's metal rung ladder. Just like the cistern below it, the burned-out hunk of floating city was now full of people. There were DFZ cops, SWAT units, a Merlin Council mage team, city clerks, the works. It was the biggest show of civic authority I'd ever seen in this city. And I liked it. The huge response made me feel as if I'd done the right thing. And I knew Dr. Lyle was happy. After much prodding from the freezing wind, I'd given all his research notes about creating cockatrices to the mages, making very sure that they knew it was the work of Dr. Theodore Lyle, brilliant historical thaumaturge and steadfast defender of the breed. I still had to return Dr. Lyle's hand to Peter, along with my apologies. But the empty wind must have thought I was good for it by that point, because the grave cold wind let me be, finally letting me warm up again as I wandered the ruins in search of Nick. I found him at the edge of the island, standing in the middle of a collapsed building that hadn't been collapsed when we'd gotten here. From the fist-sized holes in the blackened cement, I could guess what had happened. But I didn't say a word. Nick had given up more tonight than I had. And not just because he'd had the 60% share. He deserved to be mad. Though I did a quick, silent prayer pleading to the DFC not to punish him for taking it out on her buildings. Hey, I said when he finally noticed me standing behind him. They're ready for us to sign off. Nick took a breath so deep it moved his entire body. Then he dusted off his hands and walked over to grab his jacket, his bag, and Kaufman, who was still trussed up with rope and now sported a bloody gag. I said as Nick threw the man over his shoulder. Do I want to know what you're going to do? No, Nick said in a monotone. I swallowed my next question, leading him back to the dragon as quickly as I could go. We signed the form without incident. I used my real name, but Nick put down a crypto ID, the blockchain-based anonymous identifier that anyone could use in place of their name in the DFZ. Add in the bloody man he was carrying on his shoulder, and I knew we had to look shady as hell. But the electronic form accepted his ID no problem, so the dragon didn't say a word. That's that, she said when all the authentications turned green. Good work, everyone. Let's pack it in. The crowd nodded and began collecting their things. Nick was already carrying Kaufman toward the portal, which, since it led out at the Dragon Consulate downtown, wasn't that far from where we'd parked his car. I was about to run after him when the dragon caught my arm. Wait, she said, squinting at the form we'd just signed. Your name is Opal Yonge? That means you belong to the Dragon of Korea, right? I winced at the word belong. I'm a part of his household, yes. Oh, well, that explains it. Explains what? I asked nervously. The curse, she said, waving her hand in the general vicinity of my face. You've got a dragon curse on you. I wasn't going to tell you since I didn't want to mess up anyone's plans. But the Dragon of Korea still hasn't joined the Peacemakers Alliance. So he can choke on his tail for all I... What does it do? She closed her mouth slowly, electric green eyes narrowing, and I shrank in my boots. Interrupting a dragon was never good. But I couldn't help it. Please, great dragon, I said, bowing my head in a flagrant display of deference. I apologize for my rudeness, but I have to know. What curse am I under?
Nice groveling, she said, patting me on the head. And it's a bad luck curse. Not one of those cheap jobs that makes you stub your toes all the time, either. This is the real deal. The kind that hits you where it hurts the most.
She grinned at me.
I bet you've had a really rotten year, haven't you? She had no idea.
Thank you, great dragon, I said through clenched teeth. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your insight.
The dragoness cooed at me for being such a polite little mortal and sent me away, yelling at her team to hurry it up. Almost too angry to see, I turned and walked with the rest of the people flowing toward the portal to the Dragon Consulate. Despite my upbringing, I'd never been inside the consulate. Other dragons brought their mortals here all the time. It was one of the safest places in the world for them, since the Dragon of Detroit did not tolerate violence between clans on his turf. But between his low respect for the Peacemaker and outright hatred of the dirt and savagery of the DFZ, my father had never brought any of us along the few times a year he was forced to come here. I got lost immediately, and ended up walking up 3 floors when I should have gone down 2. Finally, after much consulting with Sybil and 3 stops to ask for directions, I walked out the front door of the massive consulate's underground entrance to find Nick waiting. I hadn't realized how braced I'd been to never see him again until I spotted him. Even better, he was waiting in his car, which was another miracle, because I was 7 miles from home and had no money for a cab. I still walked down the steps with trepidation, bending down to look at him through the window. Can I get in?
Only if you take off that damn spy camera, he muttered, keeping his eyes on the mirrors like he expected someone in the crowded pickup zone to start breathing fire.
Which, to be fair, was a distinct possibility here. I didn't wait to be asked twice. I ripped my goggles off my head and jumped in, turning off both my devices and shoving them deep into my bag before putting it in the back seat. Where's Kaufman?
In the trunk, Nick said casually. I'm saving him for later.
24 hours ago, hearing that would have terrified me. Now, though, I just nodded.
Give him one for me, please.
He's already had several for you, Nick said as he pulled us out. But there's always room for more.
We drove the next few minutes in silence. This was partially because I didn't want to distract Nick while he was navigating the swarms of tourists that always invaded this part of downtown, but mostly because I had no idea what to say. I felt as if I'd done him a great wrong tonight, which sucked, because I'd been trying to do right. I didn't want to apologize for that. But I needed to say something. I wasn't sure when it had happened exactly, but at some point during the last day and a half, I'd come to think of Nick and me as being on the same side. Now, though, it felt like we were enemies again, and I hated that.
Listen, I said when I couldn't take it anymore. About what happened.
Don't.
I flinched like the word was a blow. And Nick sighed.
I don't want to talk about what happened down there,
he said, keeping his eyes steadfastly on the road.
It is what it is. End of story.
It's not the end, I said determinedly. I still have to tell you that I think you did the right thing.
I know you think that,
he said, leaning his head hard against the driver's seat's padded headrest.
But all I can think about is the fact that I threw away 60% of $7 million.
A lot of replies ran through my head at that. I wanted to tell him he'd saved so much more. That I was proud of him. That he'd proven my faith in him. Those were my sincere feelings. But they all sounded too saccharine and sentimental when I imagined saying them out loud. So I kept my mouth shut, staring at my hands as the orange street lamps flashed past. Then, when we stopped for a traffic light, Nick spoke again.
I'm glad I didn't do it.
My head shot up. Really?
I still hate that I lost the money, he warned. I'm going to be mad about that for a very long time. But that's the nature of opportunity cost. Sometimes you have to give up one thing to get something else.
The light changed, and he started us forward again, hands clenched tight on the wheel.
I've given up a lot of things I shouldn't for money, he said,
his voice quiet, as if he was talking to himself.
What happened in that cistern has happened before. Never for that much, of course, but same basic situation. All the other times I chose the money, and every single time I regretted it. Not right away. Sometimes not for years. But sooner or later, I always missed what I'd sold. And I couldn't get it back.
I twisted my hands in my lap.
But this time was different, he went on. This time, you were there. And while I'm regretting the hell out of my choice right now, I think I'll feel different in the long run. Which is the run that matters.
I blew out a long breath. Then, to my absolute mortification, I started to cry.
What?
Nick said, looking at me in horror.
What did I say?
Nothing, I said, scrubbing at my face. It's me. It's all me. Not you. I thought you were going to hate me. And I'm so relieved that you don't.
How could I hate you?
He said, his voice frustrated.
You were just trying to help me. I'm mad at you, but it'll pass.
I can accept that, I said, giving him a watery smile. He nodded. And that was that. We spent the rest of the drive talking about little things. How fancy the dragon consulate had been. The idiot on the corner who was trying to wrestle a bucket of fried chicken away from a gutter nutria the size of a pit bull. How much longer we'd have to endure the heat before fall arrived to save us. But we didn't mention what had happened in the cistern again. I was still laughing about the chicken guy when we pulled into the lot from my apartment. And Nick cut the engine with a click that felt unaccountably final.
So what are you going to do?
He asked the steering wheel.
About your dad, I mean.
I sighed. The clock had turned off with the car. But I didn't need it. I'd been secretly watching it the whole way back. I knew exactly how late it was and how screwed that made me. Nothing to do, I said at last, giving him a hapless shrug. It's 11:30. The deadline's at midnight, and I have exactly $0. So unless you know of a way someone with maxed out credit and nothing to sell can get $10,000 in 30 minutes, I'm pretty much sunk. I knew why that was now, of course. My 5-month-long bad luck streak hadn't been a streak at all. I'd been under a dragon curse. And I was pretty sure I knew which dragon was responsible. But that was a fury from my father. Not Nick. We'd already met our negative emotions quota for the night. I wasn't about to bring in more now. Especially since this might be the last time I saw him. It won't be so bad, I said quietly. Like you said, I'm going back to the land of private jets and chauffeured cars. It's hardly the gulag. I lost this round, but there will be other chances. Even dragons can't think of everything. I'll just find a different way to win.
I bet you can, he said,
smiling at me. Then he glanced up at my apartment.
You think he'll come for you here?
That would make the most sense. I was certain Sybil had already ratted out where I lived. Nick nodded like that was a profound statement.
Need help carrying your stuff up?
For a moment, I wasn't sure what he was talking about. I only had the one shoulder bag, and I didn't care what happened to my plastic trash bag full of cleaning clothes and almost empty bottles of shampoo if I was going back to Korea. I was opening my mouth to tell him not to worry about it when I suddenly remembered. My collection! I'd totally forgotten about the box of treasures Nick had packed up for me when I'd had to flee my apartment, which made me feel terrible. How could I forget my darlings? They're still in the trunk, right?
Actually, I moved them up here,
Nick said, reaching back to pull the box out of the back seat behind me.
I didn't want Kaufman to bleed on them.
I could have hugged him then. He was just so thoughtful in the strangest ways. But it didn't seem appropriate. So I held back, distracting myself by grabbing the rest of my stuff and running up the stairs while Nick came behind me with my box. When I reached my door, though, I didn't know why we'd bothered.
Great, I said, dropping my bags to the ground.
The door of my apartment was hanging on its hinges, the deadbolt shattered by what had to have been one hell of a kick. The inside was even worse. Kaufman must have brought in the same guys who'd destroyed Dr. Lyle's house, because everything that could be broken had been. They'd even taken the time to rip open every single paper cup in my cup noodle stash, which was just petty. If I hadn't been about to be kidnapped back home, I would have flown into a rage. As it was, all I could do was sigh. Please punch Kaufman a lot for me.
I will, Nick promised,
setting my box down in the middle of the living room floor, the only part of my apartment that wasn't covered in pulverized debris.
So,
he said, rubbing the back of his neck.
I guess this is goodbye.
My heart started to sink. I'd known this was coming, but that didn't mean I wanted to hear it. I'll be back someday, I promised, both to him and myself. My dad hates this city, which makes it my favorite place in the world.
Do you want me to tell the other cleaners?
That I got sent home? I snorted. No way. Let them think I hit it rich and retired to a life of leisure. That's a good happy ending to the life of Cleaner Yonge. He nodded. Then I nodded. And then we both just stopped and sort of stood there, staring at each other as the minutes ticked down. You should probably go, I said at last. You don't want to be here when my dad arrives.
No,
he agreed, looking at me one last time.
Have a good life, Opal.
You too, I said, proud that my voice didn't shake. Honestly, this felt more like defeat than anything else had tonight, but I'd already been a weepy idiot once. I refused to do it again while he was here. There'd be plenty of time for crying and hating the world back at my father's lair in Seoul. For now, I was going to remember every moment, watching Nick as he waved goodbye and slipped silently out my broken door, shutting what was left of the splintered wood behind him. I stood staring at the place where he'd been for a long time. It was a sad, mopey thing to do, but what else did I have? My apartment didn't even have a place to sit down anymore. In my bag, I heard my goggles turn themselves back on, which I assumed meant Sybil was sending my location to my dad. I could have marched over and turned her back off, but there didn't seem to be much point. Whether it happened now or an hour from now, I was finished. I'd challenged the Dragon of Korea, and I'd lost. I was trying to be stoic about it when a knock sounded on my door. Like a condemned prisoner walking to her noose, I trudged the 4 feet across my splinter-strewn carpet. I didn't want my father to see me beaten, though, so I forced myself to straighten up. When I'd squared my shoulders and pulled myself to my full height, such as it was, I grabbed the hole where my doorknob had been and yanked the door open, defiant scowl ready on my face. And nearly walked straight into Nick. "What are you doing back here?" I whispered frantically, pushing past him to check if my father's limo was in the parking lot yet. "He's coming any minute!"
"I know," Nick said. "That's why I rushed."
He grabbed my hand and shoved something into it.
"Here."
I looked down in confusion. Nick had thrust an envelope into my hand. One of those yellow bank envelopes no one used anymore. The kind they put cash in. "What's this?"
"A loan," he said, staring at me intently. "I'm loaning you $10,000.
I jumped so hard I almost dropped the envelope. "What?"
"I'm loaning you $10,000, Nick repeated. "Now you can pay your dad."
"You can't do that," I cried. He shrugged.
"Why not? You already cost me millions of dollars tonight. What's 10,000 more?"
"I can't accept this," I said, thrusting the envelope back at him. "You can't just give me $10,000.
"I'm not giving it to you," he said, his voice growing annoyed. "I already told you. It's a loan. You can just pay it back later."
"No, I can't," I said desperately. "If I could just pay back $10,000, I wouldn't be in this mess. But there's no chance. I'm cursed." Nick smiled at me.
"You're not cursed."
"No, I mean, I'm literally cursed with dragon magic," I explained. "That's why I've had such a horrible 5 months. I found out from the dragoness who took the cockatrices that my dad cursed me to have bad luck."
"Oh," Nick said.
Then he shrugged.
"Doesn't matter."
"How does that not matter?" I cried.
"Because I'm not cursed," he said, giving me a smirk. "How about this? You've always been a better cleaner than I am, and I've always been jealous of your ability to look at a place and see the hidden money. Now you need someone to make bids who isn't magically doomed. So what if we work together? You can tell me which units are goodbyes, and I'll handle all the actual transactions that your bad luck would hurt. That way, we can finally stop wasting cash bidding against each other. We'll piss everyone else off, make a ton of money, and you can pay me back out of our earnings. Everyone wins. We'll split everything 60-40. It'll be great."
I scowled at the envelope of money in my hands. 50-50.
"Deal,"
he said immediately, sticking out his hand. I took it at once, wrapping my fingers tight around his as we shook. "Thank you."
"You act like I'm the one giving charity,"
he said, grinning at me.
"But I just got my number one competitor working on my side. So who's ahead now?"
He rubbed his palms together.
"I'm finally going to get my hands on those jackpot auctions you're always winning."
"Don't count your money yet," I warned him. "I still don't know how this curse works, and..." I cut off when my ears caught the sound of footsteps on the stairs. Very familiar footsteps. From the look on his face, Nick heard them too, and he bolted for the door.
"Tomorrow morning,"
he whispered over his shoulder as he raced down the open hall.
6 a.m. auction. I'll pick you up."
I nodded, shooing him away with my hands just in time as my father rounded the opposite corner. There was no pretty accessory mortal this time. He was alone, and he looked strangely tired. His beautiful face pinched. His eyes flicked past me to the open-air corridor Nick had just vanished down. But while I was sure he could smell that I'd had a visitor, my father didn't comment. He just held out his hand.
"Come."
I scowled at his extended palm, and then I slapped Nick's envelope down on top of it. My father's upswept brows furrowed slightly.
"What's this?"
"My payment." His yellow-green eyes flicked down as he tore the envelope open, and then his jaw tightened.
Cash,
he said scornfully, pulling out the bills.
Who still uses cash, aside from criminals?
Me, I said, crossing my arms over my chest. Sorry it's not a bank transfer, but it's still legal tender, and you have to take what you can get when there's a curse on your head. He didn't even try to deny it.
I suppose you're going to demand that I remove it,
he said, crossing his arms over his chest. Nope, I said, shaking my head. You're not going to, so I'm not going to waste my breath. I just wanted you to know that I know, and that it doesn't matter. Curse or no curse, I'm not giving up. I'm going to pay you back in full, and then we never have to see each other again. My father's hand clenched, his pale, elegant, claw-like nails shredding the money I'd handed him into confetti. I flinched at the soft sound of ripping paper. But when I looked up again, he wasn't staring down at me in fury. He just looked sad. So, so sad. Like that money had been his heart. And I, not him, was the one who'd torn it to shreds.
Why are you doing this, Opal?
He asked quietly.
Why will you not come home?
Because I don't want to come home.
Why?
He demanded, throwing the shredded money on the ground.
Have I not been a good provider? Have I not given you everything you could want?
You never gave me what I wanted, I told him bitterly. You gave me what you wanted. You gave me a handcrafted Steinway baby grand piano for my 12th birthday. I don't even play.
You could have learned,
he said, the horrible sadness falling off his face as the much more familiar anger pushed its way to the fore.
I will not apologize for being generous. And as to your wants, I have done nothing but cater to them for the last 4 years. I have let you run positively wild, and you have made an absolute mess of it. I just had a call from the Peacemaker, the insane dragon of Detroit himself, that my daughter was running around in the gnarls with injuries. Do you have any concept of how badly that reflects on me?
On you? I cried. I was the one who was hurt.
Because of your recklessness,
he yelled back.
You care more for the well-being of the criminal who was just here than you do for your own. But you are my Opal, my treasure. I would never allow anyone to treat my property as shoddily as you have treated yourself.
Then stop making me, I shouted, not caring that my neighbors were starting to poke their heads out. If I wasn't trying to pay your debt and struggling under your curse, I wouldn't have had to do any of this.
The debt was your idea,
he snarled.
Not mine. If you can't pay it, that's not my fault. But if you think for one moment I will allow you to walk away without a fight, you have not been paying attention.
Believe me, I said in a deadly voice. I've been paying attention. I know exactly how dirty you're willing to fight now. But you should know better than anyone that I will never give up. Curses, debts, hacking my AI. That's just you showing how desperate you're getting. Which means I must be closer to winning than ever. And I will win. Even if I have to break everything to do it. By the time I finished, my dad was staring at me like he'd never seen me before.
You selfish, foolish child,
he whispered, reaching out to touch my face.
You don't even know what you're stomping on.
Neither do you, I said, ducking away from his touch. If you want me to stop taking risks, stop putting my back against the wall. Just leave me be.
Never,
he swore.
Where do you think you learned not to quit? I will never stop chasing you, little dog girl. Not until you are safely back at my feet where you belong.
Then I guess we'll be doing this again next month, I said stubbornly. Because this month is mine. Now. I pushed the pile of shredded money he'd dropped on the ground toward him with my foot. Here's your payment. So kindly get off my porch. He grabbed the money in a motion so fast my eyes couldn't follow it. Clutching the ruined bills, he bared his sharpening teeth at me and whirled away, stomping down the stairs with such force the whole apartment block shook. I shook too, my body trembling as I watched him get into his limo and drive away. When I was certain he wasn't coming back, I went back inside and started moving the bigger pieces of debris to block my broken door. Not to block him. I'd learned ages ago there was no stopping my father when he wanted in. But it was impossible to relax when you didn't have a door. I couldn't fix it tonight, but I could make a barrier. So I piled the wreckage high. When I felt comfortable that any would-be intruders would trip and break their necks before they reached me, I curled up in the shreds of my bed and went to sleep. After all, I had an early work day tomorrow, and there was no way Nick was letting me sleep in. And when I dreamed of the brief, happy time when I'd been young enough to confuse presence with love. And my father had been my world.